Hello and welcome to You Really Shouldn't Have, with me, James Warwick, the podcast where each week I sit down with a different guest as we discuss their career and unwrap the story behind the worst gift they've ever been given. Joining me on this week's show is musician Steve Norman. A founding member of Spandau Ballet, Steve dropped by to discuss his career in music and, of course, lets me in on the worst gift he's ever been given. So, Steve, it's great to have you here. Welcome to the show.
It's nice to be here. Thank you very much, James.
I wanted to go right back to the beginning to start with and sort of your introduction to music, because I guess a lot of people will associate the saxophone with you, but I know that you're obviously a multi-instrumentalist, so I wondered what your journey was in respect of instruments.
I guess I gravitated towards drums, actually, when I was younger. I think all kids do that got an interest in music, wherever they are, they sort of absorb that person's record collection. You go through your mum and dad's and your siblings or whatever. And I did that very much so. And it was drums in the beginning. I was fascinated with the rhythms. My uncle Jim, he had a big collection of Cliff Richard and the Shadows, loads of the Shadows record. And I used to get boxes and turn them upside down, like cardboard boxes. I was only about nine or even less than that. And then sort of like biscuit tins, that was a good snare. And just with knives the other way around and just sort of batter away. There's a couple of tunes that Little B and Big B were those two big tunes that I kind of learned. Good, 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 that stuff. But my mum and dad couldn't have a kit in their house, couldn't even afford one. So via a dear friend of mine, Steve, who had parents with a fair bit of dosh, they bought him a drum kit and he let me play it occasionally. But I thought I'd better look around for something else. So when I was about 14, I think, it was guitar. So I bagged myself a guitar. That was that's my main instrument, funnily enough. Percussion came later because of that inherent sort of desire for bashing things, you know. So percussion and hand percussion, I still explore that, play that a lot to this day. And the sax came a little bit later, what was it, 82, I think, just before the true solo. And I thought, well, you know, let's see what else I fancy doing. And that has become my sort of go-to, I guess. It's my signature instrument.
So yeah. let's touch on Spandau Ballet then. Let's go back to the beginning of that journey for you. You all met at school, am I right in saying that? You all met at school?
That's yeah, how you very much so. Yeah, we went to school. It would have been the year of 71, secondary school. So within two or three years, Gary and I gravitated together because we had a mutual love of music. And we went out an awful lot exploring London, the sort of pub scene where bands would play. Went to the Marquee an awful lot, you know, saw AC/DC. It always amazes me. There was like literally 20 or 30 people there at the time. Wow. When Bon Scott was holding Angus Young on his shoulders, you know. And it was amazing. And look where they went. Saw loads of bands all over London. And, you know, the pub scene was very healthy in the 70s to see live music. And then, of course, in 76, we got together, mates from school, a couple of years before Martin would join. But, you know, we got together and started playing those pubs and small venues that we were watching the bands in, you know. So that's where it all started, really, school band.
And in terms of when you signed your first deal, what are your memories of that process?
Yeah, well, you know, we tread the boards for a few years from 76. And in 1980, you don't think you can't get arrested. You think, well, you know, what's going on? But that we were lucky to, it was just really coincidental that this movement was starting on the club scene. Well, there was a club scene starting because there really wasn't one up until then. And we happened to be there. Our manager, Steve Dagger, he took me and Gary, I think, initially go to a club called Billy's, which then the whole movement outgrew Billy's and it was moved to Blitz, which you know is legendary, really.
Oh, absolutely.
But it was a real creative hot pot down there, you know. It really, loads of people came from there and did really well, and the feeling was of it really was indestructibility. All the ideas while we were getting pissed, really. You know, it's, you know, once you wake up with that stinking hangover, the ideas didn't go away. And people just sort of, you know, went for those ideas that we'd be sort of talking about a million miles an hour on a Tuesday night down the Blitz, you know. And yeah, that's where it all started for us. And the whole scene was a very electric and vibrant. It was wonderful. And we were right at the front of that scene, musically speaking.
Now, the reason you're here is because it's a very important landmark, the 40th anniversary of Journeys to Glory, of course, Spandau Ballet's debut record. Going back to the production process of the record, what are your major memories from that time?
The production process, I mean, we didn't know anything about production, of course, never been in a studio, but we did know someone who was also going down the Blitz, Richard James Burgess. He was in a band called Landscape, and they all their instruments were almost all electronic, you know. It was a completely electronic band. But he got what we were doing. He was one of us on a Tuesday night. And he just seemed to be the right guy to sort of take us into the studio and hold our hands, really, which he did. And we were fortunate to have a hit straight away with To Cut a Long Story Short. It's my favourite period, I have to say, when everything was exciting and it's all in front of you, you know. You feel like you're the Beatles and the Stones, you know. That's how it was back then. Love that feeling.
I guess being shoved into the limelight, as it were, with that debut record must have been, you know, quite a culture shock and quite a change for all of you.
Yeah, I mean, we'd sort of been, let's say, underground for a couple of years. And then you suddenly realise that everyone is, you know, that was our journey to glory we'd started on. And everyone else is beginning on their particular journey to glory. So you had Boy George, who was there at the Blitz. You know, he went off and formed a band himself.
Yep.
Done all right. Steve Strange, bless him, you know, with Visage and Rusty Egan. Midure, you know, I'm still mates with all these people. Still loads of the people that rubbed shoulders with down the Blitz. And, you know, clothes designer Stephen Jones, a hat designer, milliner. You know, he's done so well. Dylan Jones, Galliano. So many people have come out of there with those sort of ideas on a Tuesday night, and now they're sort of household names. So, for us, there was a change after a couple of years. We thought, well, everyone's going off on their individual journeys now, and it all thinned out. So, you know, we thought, okay, we don't have to sort of cater to the cool contingent anymore because they're not there anymore. They're doing their own thing. Let's go global in a way. And we just went more commercial. It was a conscious, sort of realization that we weren't going to be dance anymore, four on the floor. We're just going to go back to our soul roots. And, you know, Gary started writing songs like True and Gold and that. And before you knew it, we were more sort of mainstream.
Uh-huh.
And also, you know, we wanted to sell a few more records. Cool is cool, but, you know, it doesn't really sort you out for life, does it? You know, maybe it does in some cases, but anyway.
Almost subject to the record, it seems like the right time to bring up your new tour because you're back on the road in early 2022 with your band The Sleeves to celebrate the anniversary, 40th anniversary of Journeys to Glory. 14 nights across 2022 playing the album in full along with some other hits as well. How's that process been of putting the tour together?
At the moment, we haven't rehearsed the tunes. I mean, some of them we have because, you know, I've been playing these tunes for donkey's years.
Yeah, you don't need to.
And only recently with The Sleeves, gone back to the true sort of versions in a way. You know, I mean, with Spandau, we deviated a little bit, you know, because we were bored of playing the songs in the same way, you know. Mistake, just keep it as it is. You know, you can change things a little bit. But anyway, so at the moment, it's really all the sort of organising, speaking to people like your good self, you know, telling people about it. And I have to say, I'm very happy about the response because I know a lot of people would love it to be Spandau. You know, I'd love it to be Spandau, but it's not possible. And they know about it. And as far as I know, everyone's given it their blessing. I'm in touch with everybody. I'm getting on with everybody, even if they're not getting on with each other. and the general feel really with the tour is it's a cool idea. You know, for me, it's really important. I'm all over that album. You know what? It's representing me, even if the rest of the boys can't be there to do it with me. You know, I think it's a special album, you know. I probably had few mixed reviews at the time. Don't want to be negative because the right people gave it the right reviews. But looking back on it, I think it was a fairly important synth pop, you know, electronica record that quite simply wasn't coming out of the UK that much, you know. Yeah, I'm proud of it. Yeah,
and so I'll be flying. And so you should be. And so you should be. And your son's in the band also, Steve, am I correct?
He is. Yeah. It's his kind of hobby, really. It's as annoying as it sounds, you know. He's got a chance of being his dad playing all these Spandau numbers. Not just Spandau. We do a lot of songs that meant a lot to me growing up. Bowie, Stevie Wonder or whatever, you know. It's all in our set. But my son's an actor, but I bring him into this, you know, so that he's like a little me. Anyway, so he looks, he's younger, obviously, but he looks a bit like me, and he brings the age down somewhat, the average. The band is my friends, my partner Sabrina. You know, it's also her sort of hobby, and she helps me on vocals and. And adds a bit of glamour. And then there's my dear friend Joe Beckett, who is we go back donkey's years, really. He actually came on the tour, Joe. I met him in a nightclub in the late 80s, and the next month he was on a world tour with Spandau Ballet. And we kept in touch ever since. He's my dear friend. And then, you know, normally it's Paul Cutterford. We've got Luis Correa, he's playing guitar on this tour. You know, but the sleeves is like an umbrella. It's for, you know, it's just a little bit of a little bit of sanctuary, really, and you know, where you can relax and wear your heart on your sleeve, really. That was no pun intended. It's just convenient. Yeah.
Well, you talked about showcasing your vocal there, and I think you touched on it briefly in a previous answer. But I wondered, when you're playing this album in full, is it sort of you changing the arrangements at all, or is it more important to sort of stay true? Well, no pun intended.
It's a real fine line that I find is treading in. It's like you don't want to be a pastiche of yourself or Spandau, but you've got to. I want to respect all the members in the band and what they did. You know, it's nothing really more annoying for me when I hear some band doing true live and they don't do the true solo. I mean, it's really annoying. So I think everyone would be a bit annoyed if they're not in there somewhere. And this I have to get close. But we're not Spandau, even though they've got 1/5 of Spandau in the sleeves. It's never going to – it doesn't matter what musicians you play with, how good they are. If they try and replicate a Spandau song, even if one person's out of place, it just changes the groove. It changes something. You know, that's the uniqueness about the members of a band, because once someone is different, it changes the whole sound. So I don't want to go too far away, but I've also got to respect the sleeves. So, yes. And like, it's a little bit more sort of a punky edge to us, I would say.
So as we said, the tour kicks off 8th of February next year in Wokingham, and then runs through London, Altrincham, Darlington, Lindum, St Anne's, Guildford, Norwich, Birmingham, Southend-on-Sea, Brighton, Lancaster, Barrow-in-Furness, Edinburgh, and finally Glasgow on the 25th of February.
So, wow, thank you for doing that.
There you go.
That's me doing it.
I was going to say, you've got to get them all in. Got to know where you are. Got to know where all to in. Find you. Yeah. Now, I did want to touch on a couple of things, Spandau related and your music career related, because obviously we're coming very, very close to Christmas, and obviously Band Aid was something you were involved in. So I just wondered how that was. How was that being brought together with all those amazing artists?
I tell you, then it was very tricky, because the night before, Spandau were in, I think it was Hamburg, with Duran Duran on a big TV pop show. And whenever we used to get together, you know, you've heard the squabbles about Spandau and Duran Duran. It was only in the press, really. And, that was it. As soon as there was a party and they were going to be there, it was like, really? Right, Duran's going to be there. Fantastic. And we both got really excited, both camps, you know. So, of course, when we went to Hamburg, it was the obligatory who's going to last longest, you know. Last man standing. It's really, there's a lot lays in that, the last person to go to bed. It's the last man standing. And we had to win every time.
Yeah.
So nevertheless, we rocked up at that studio, Psalm West, on that, was it Sunday morning, with stinking hangovers. the unbelievable. I can even feel it now. It's making me feel sick. We were so hungover. You can see it in some of the footage. I mean, Martin was trying to talk. He shouldn't have tried. And, you know, we're all the same. I was trying to walk. Should have got someone to carry me. It was that bad. But it was a fantastic day once that all wore off. And, you know, the spirit of everyone singing that chorus at the end of it was phenomenal. You know, no, I don't think anyone realised how massive that was going to be.
Oh,
we didn't even quite understand why we were there, you know, the charity record. But, you know, it was only sort of like when it all unravelled. But great memories of that. I mean, you look at the people that were in there as well. A little snapshot of, you know, the rock and roll royalty at the time.
Oh, definitely.
Not everybody, but, you know, a lot of them. It was fantastic. I do remember I was at the back for the group chorus shots, and behind me were Status Quo. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Rick and Francis, absolutely, that, just doing shots like behind there like a couple of kids. It's very funny. It was really funny.
That's brilliant.
Yeah. It was wonderful. And then 6 months later, of course, Live Aid.
Yeah, which brings me nicely on to the next question, which was about Live Aid, because I understand that Spandau were the first act that Bob Geldof approached.
I believe so, yeah. That's right. I think didn't Bob bump into Gary in an antique shop, which sounds absolutely spot on, really. and they talked about it. And we were, yeah. And I remember on the day going back to Band Aid, in fact, I should tell you that Boy George didn't, he was in America, he was in New York. So he said, look, I can't do it. I'm in America. And Bob just got the phone. I was there when he called him. It was a proper phone. You put the money in or whatever. Yeah. And he said, just get your fucking on a plane over here. And he did, you know, 5 hours on Concorde. He turned up, no makeup, moaning, Mr. Grumps, you know, but then laid down that fantastic vocal, you know. And Tony Hadley was the first one to actually record a vocal.
Oh, wow.
Tony, yeah. I mean, that was a big old thing. You've got all your sort of peers there and the pressure would have been enormous, you know. And they said, well, who's going first? And Hugh Padgham, I think that was. And he said, oh, I will. And he was the first to record, even though he's not the first that appears on the record, mm-hmm. The voice, yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah, great days, yeah.
And then Live Aid, what do you remember of the day as a whole, the whole spectacle? Because, I mean, that was something that we'd never seen before. I mean, I say that, I wasn't alive, yeah. Steve, to be honest. But
is that right? Oh, my goodness. Dear me. Okay. Yeah, well, blimey. I mean, you must have seen some videos.
Oh, of course, stuff. Of course. I mean, if you talk to anybody of a certain age, they'll tell you about it. I mean, I've seen it.
Yeah.
I've seen the whole thing. Yeah. I mean, I just wasn't there for the event because I wasn't
there. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Oh, it was incredible. I mean, we flew in the day before, actually. I say we flew in because we came in by helicopter. And Noah Lebmans was shuttling people backwards and forwards, yeah. But the day before was actually rehearsals. And I've got this great footage of Status Quo standing. It's only rehearsals. So there's no punters there, no crowd. And just filming them doing Don't Waste My Time, I think it is. It's off their Pole Driver. I was a fan of Quo years ago, yeah. And it was just brilliant, you know. It's been money. And everyone, there was Martin and the band and all these people and Geldof going like this, you know, to the side of the stage. Those are the kind of memories that I'll never forget, you know. And I'll never forget jumping off the stage in these trousers, like when I went to the front to play a solo and thinking, oh, my God, I just realised I think I've split my trousers. So I had to jump back up without it revealing itself. Luckily, it was, you know, just a couple of stitches. But you know, can you imagine that? As you're going up, that's going to be on telly for the rest of your life.
Yeah,
every July, you know. So But it was great. Fantastic memories, really.
Now we've reached the part of the show, Steve, where I have to ask you, what is the worst gift you've ever been given?
It was a tricky one, this, but I wouldn't say this was the worst gift, but it's the most embarrassing.
Okay.
So this was about 2015, and we're on tour. Sorry, Spandau are on tour, and every time we go, we do a sound check, and then there's what you call like. Meet and greets, some people come in earlier and maybe like 20, 30 people sometimes, you know. Then you sort of come by, spend a few moments with them, have a picture, a few words, and it's really nice. So we're doing this, and John Keeble and I heard that there was a real massive fan of the band who's a porn star.
Oh.
Yeah, he's a porn star. So anyway, that created a little buzz, of course, as it would, and really, really sweet. And I'll mention her first name. She's called Tanya, and okay. She's a sweetheart. And she'd seen us before, and we'd had a chat. And she just, you know, Liverpudlian lass. She's sort of the earth, really. And so anyway, we know that she's going to rock up, yeah. So we're in the meet and greet, and we're sort of, everyone's coming towards us, and we've spotted her along the line, and we were like a couple of kids giggling, you know. Eventually she comes, and she's so sweet, I can't speak highly of her, she's so lovely. And then she says, oh, I've bought something for you guys, and there's a couple of little bit of a bit of swag.
Oh yeah.
And there was like a couple of DVDs in there. She said, these are my latest DVDs. So I looked at the front. And at the front, oh, yeah, it's like, you know, it's got some people having some fun. You know? Turn it over. Oh, my word. And there's all these people in the queue. And so, what's that? It was so funny. She's a sweetheart. I mean, the most embarrassing thing, though, because we also, John and I, we both were, you know, we followed her on Twitter. Why not? You know, except of course you're sort of opening up your Twitter, you're having a look, and the first picture is like, oh my goodness. But you know, sweetheart, that was a very embarrassing present.
Steve, wrapping up, I've got a few questions that I ask everyone that comes on this show.
Yeah.
So if you could go back to your childhood and give yourself a gift that you had then that you don't have now, what would you go back and rescue?
It's just the first thing that popped into my head, I have to be honest.
Yeah, go for
I had this doggy that had like a push thing on it, and it was like a Skye Terrier. Yeah. So it was like short-haired Skye Terrier or something. It looked huge, probably was about like that, you know. I must have been four or something. And I was playing up, and Mum said, if you keep playing up, then your toys are going to go down the chute, because we lived in a block of flats, and they had a chute for everyone from the top, yeah? And right, that's it. She took my toys out there and dumped them down the chute.
No.
I was gutted. And in particular, there was this Skye doggy thing that I used to push and that. Yeah, I did behave myself, I think, from that point on. But I wish I'd behaved myself a bit earlier, because I really missed that little doggy.
Oh. And Steve, if you could go back to the beginning of your career and give yourself a gift to help to get where you are now, what would you give yourself?
You know, I can't think of anything really. I've never sort of, I've been really lucky.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I know it's not what you want to hear, but, you know, it's not like I never had that envy thing too much and that. Yeah, the trappings, you know. I had a full-size snooker table once and a swimming pool. Nice. But, you know, once you have them, you use them less than all your mates do, you know, all that stuff. But, no, I couldn't say there's anything, really. I was lucky to have music going on. People's houses I went to let me play their music or their musical instruments. So I've not wanted for anything, I'll be honest with you.
That's very honest. And Steve, where can people find out more about you and what you do?
Steve Norman Official, I think it is.
That's it, yeah, on Instagram.
On Facebook.
Facebook. Yeah.
Twitter, Instagram, all that stuff, you know.
Awesome. Steve, it's been so great to chat with you. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
And you, James. And you take care. Sorry, Tanya.
Thanks again for listening to this episode of You Really Shouldn't Have. Be sure to subscribe to us on your chosen podcast service to make sure you never miss another episode. You can find us on both Twitter and Instagram at Bad Gifts Pod, as well as online at badgiftspod.com.